Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It's a minute past the hour on this fourth day of October 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's, of course, where you go. You know, this is the first part of the program. The podcast listeners are going, wait till it's okay. No, that's where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room. And I say this in case there might be a noob out there somewhere, someone who isn't familiar with all of our strange and myriad mickle ways. Go to the chat room. Go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click on chat room. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right in, and you will be part of the wild, madcap, merry, multimedia, zany, wacky extravaganza that is the chat room during the hours that the program is live from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time every Monday through Friday. There you will be greeted by none other than the likes of Anatole, Don from Central PA, Dwayne, Hoghead, Jug of Punch, Soapbox Geezer, Steve from Georgia Stan, and many more as they eventually wander in. All, of course, capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has once again today, because it's that time of year in Northern California, folded space to become Man Cave. Yes. So, that's that part of it. Yep, 71 degrees today out there, so it's downright balmy in Sparky's little wonderful corner of Northern California. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is the little bit of cussing and discussing we do for 3 hours every Monday through Friday. Today, of course, is Titanic Tuesday. This is a listener-supported broadcast operation. Sadly, we are I don't know if it's sadly or not. I mean, you wouldn't much like it if we stopped every 7 minutes to run 6 minutes of commercials now, would you? But we don't have any, so you don't have to worry about that. All we have is the determined effort of our merry band to support and maintain independent, progressive conversation. That means contributions. That means going to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and clicking on the tab that says Contribute and filling out the fields there. You can sort of, if you'd like to become a monthly subscriber, and they are so, so important. For instance, last night, our monthly subscribers made up the difference in Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, making sure that we can we would get that that jump start to the first of the month. And so thanks to our subscribers. Thanks yesterday evening to the fourth of the month club, because that rolled in the early morning hours of today, the fourth. Thank you very, very kindly. That's how we keep this all going. So we've got $200 to raise this evening. Not $78,000. No, just $200. This is about the cheapest little radio show out there in the interweb tubes. So if you'd like to help out, go to headonradionetwork.com, click on contribute, fill out the fields. We don't care where you work. We don't care who you work for. That's just the way the widget was set up by Skype. And get to the set up a recurring monthly contribution if you want to. That's what we call a subscriber. $10, $20, whatever. $10 or more gets you a bumper sticker. $20 gets you both of them, the horn bumper sticker and the They Want It All bumper sticker. Lots of those are arriving in mailboxes right now. So do that, please. And hopefully we'll, 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250, or 32 at 6 and a quarter, or 64 at $3.13, because we round up. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, and some people do, do please feel free to send checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Let me know in advance when you do that, and I'll tell Boss Man Wayne to be on the lookout, and that way he can just take his spider-proof gloves in, he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck, and he won't have to take anything in with that big old hickory stick that he takes with him in case he runs into a member of the Klan checking their mail, because the UPS store we use, well, the Klan also uses it, and the UPS store is more than happy to have the Klan's business, go figure. But then again, the likelihood of running into a Klansman is probably minimized right now, because most of the Klan is out there working hammer and tongs for the Trump campaign right now, because they're going to make America white again, great again. Yeah. So that's how we keep all of this going. And your kind support is the entirety of how we keep all this going. A reminder, the wild rice offer is still on the table. The second round, the first round went out for the first 22 pounds. And we're still gathering up orders, because the processing takes a little while. And my buddy up there said, "Listen, this will be a while. So, if you want to take a while pulling together the next order, go ahead." So, remember 60 for 1 pound, 100 for two, and let me know. Just shoot me an email along with your PayPal contribution, whatever, that way. This, of course, is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. It is so named for something that Jim heard many, many years ago as he listened to right-wing radio in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia. And the world-class monotone who used to put people who were recently wide awake sound asleep and send them careening toward things like phone poles and trees and mailboxes in a magnificent monotone, reading them the newspaper every morning. I kid you not. But one morning, one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers dialed in and asked a deep, penetrating, philosophical, science-based question. Because who says Republicans are anti-science? He said, "Steve, how come you reckon it is that they is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? Because we ain't nowhere near the beach." To which Steve, the morning monotone, responded, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." The Titanic plates. And please understand, when I do my Steve impression, I can't get anywhere... I can't help but put a little bit of life into the words I speak. I can't get anywhere near the level of monotone it was hypnotic. It really was. It was like there was the auditory version of that visual, the spiral that just goes around and around and around and around and around and around. But yes, the movement of the Titanic plates. Still no word on the movement of the Titanic dumpling dippers. No. So that takes care of the beginning of the program, the Titanic dumpling dippers, hummingbird tongue tongs. Last week was hummingbird tongue tongs. Lots of stuff on the Titanic table. That's why a first class ticket was so damned expensive. The meals were outrageous. But it is. It's Titanic Tuesday, and on Titanic Tuesday we celebrate the Titanic exercises in intellect that are there for the taking, courtesy of the American white wing. I mean white wing. Almost any time, day or night. There's a whole passel of them. And so to actually be included on Titanic Tuesday is quite an achievement. When you rise to the point where you're that big hunk of ice sticking up out of the ocean, and you're the captain of the ship yelling, "All ahead, flank speed," you know you've reached a special level of conservative stupid. And in the morning, in the evening, ain't we got fun? Because we do. As is often the case, much of this always comes from the far corners of right-wing radio. And you just... Oh, you can't make it up. You just can't. You'd like to, but you can't. Over there at the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mazzupistan, you know, a lot of the times we'll have prayer meeting Wednesday lessons. I'm not even sure I know what that means, Jim. The subject line, Titanic Moranic. Jim says, "I laughed so hard I needed a body cast." I'm presuming the first time, on the first, and we don't even know if it was Monday or Tuesday or whenever that it got said, but it happened. Tonight is Democratic Vice, tonight is Vice Presidential pageant night. I'm sure it'll be interesting. Well, I don't know. Mike Pence is involved, so... Here, you want a swig of this strychnine? In the name of Jesus? Here, Tim, have a serpent, you papist! We just don't know. But whenever... Mike Pence is a sure enough... Bible thumping Trump handsy. So you never know what you're going. He may just start rolling the floors and speaking in tongues. You got to watch to find out, and I guess I will, or at least I'll listen, because I'll have to leave here the minute the program's over and head over to pick up Margie at Hellmart. I know. Look, it's a job. There aren't a hell of a lot of those around here. So, but hey, as Thomas confirmed last night, they won't be preempting me over at FYINation.com. So I can't tell you what a signal honor and thrill that is for me. Not getting preempted. Yes, I can. Getting preempted sucks. So hopefully that won't be. Thomas promised that won't be happening anymore. But no, where was I? A lot of the times, part of our prayer meeting Wednesday lesson will come from Brian Fisher, the helmet-headed, proud son of Stanford University, who broadcasts, and it's all tax-free, from the denizens of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mazzupistan, founded by Donald Wildman Sr., who, no, really, made his bones going after Bugs Bunny. Many a year ago, when I was just a little baby gospel DJ and we'd have to run that insane, blatherous bullshit. But they were giving me $3.35 an hour to do it, so I cued the tape. And he parlayed that, his opposition to Bugs Bunny and anvils falling out of the sky, into a multi-million-dollar empire, maybe hundreds of millions, and it's all tax-free, and branched out into broadcast and created the American Family Radio Network that can be heard on radio stations around the country, and I know for a fact can be heard driving through Talibandiana. Oh, that was weird. It was just weird. You know, we tried not to stop. It was like, I don't know, it was like some sort of hayseed, hay shake, and corn pone version of Wrong Turn. But Brian Fisher isn't all they have. No. Over there at the American Family Association, they've also got a pretty bleach blonde version of a babbling right-wing blithering fool. Trying to be nice here. I'm trying not to start the swearing too early. And her name is Sandy Rios. And I think she was with concern. At one point in time, maybe she... Do I remember correctly? Somebody will have to look at the bio. At one point in time, she was with the Concerned Women of America, which naturally was headed by a man. But now she is a sure enough Christian broadcaster. And she's worried, brethren and sistren. I know it's Tuesday, not Wednesday, but we're getting a jump start. This is so unutterably, titanically stupid that it wouldn't hold. So, it was just today when they fired up the broadcast machine and she invited onto her program son of Donald Wildman, Tim Wildman. He's Wildman. To discuss the future! With a little vocal fry there for good measure. And they agreed. Sandy and Tim did. Sandy! I need to get the Travolta clip for that. Ferg does that to perfection. He does Travolta saying Sandy better than anybody I know short of Travolta. But they understand, and they hope we do too, that Merca is in terrible, scarce, desperate times. Oh, yes, brethren and sister. Oh, sorry, doing the prayer meeting Wednesday thing. At least I haven't done the heck yet. Oh, damn it! Hey, let's just... And I'll mention along the way, that I stopped in the gas station last night on the way home from picking up Margie at Hellmart. I stopped in the gas station along the way. And man, there was a genuine Alex Jones listening Lulu in there. I mean, I got it all. It wasn't the Reader's Digest condensed version. It was the shrieking and the hollering about Bill and Hillary Clinton were recruited into the CIA as teenagers. And I'm not even shrieking like this guy was shrieking. I mean, full tilt boogie. American right-wing lunatic, grade A super prime. And Hillary Clinton's a murderer. And then we got to the point that I was just standing there laughing at him, which was honestly dangerous for me because this is West Virginia, where any loony right winger can. I said, "No, wait, you're going to go full Benghazi in a minute," and away he went. And then I went 3-2-1, Vince Foster, and whoo, MENA Airport. Yeah, and I should have known better. Shouldn't have done it. But have done it. Probably get a whooping. Mama told me if I do'd it, I'd get a whooping, but I do'd it. Whooped out the phone, opened a note, started thumb typing. What are you writing? Just taking down date and time and identity for once Hillary's elected and we start sending people to the re-education camps. And turned around and walked out. And then, because the goddess of irony is a good goddess, to whom I shall have to sacrifice a couple of cases of rubber chickens at midnight tonight, while standing and then sitting repeatedly upon an entire trailer truckload of whoopee cushions. That's how one propitiates the goddess of irony, you know. I get Sandy Rios. Sandy! And I'll be damned. I will be dipped. Get the hockey puck. Would you? Just reach over, get it, and kind of go by it. Because you're going to want it. If you don't use the duct tape, you're liable to shoot it halfway across the room and maybe break a window. Here we go. Strap in.
Illegal immigrants are pouring over the southern border even as we speak. The word is out that if Trump gets elected, they better get in now. So the Border Patrol is absolutely overrun. We are, if we, meaning Americans who love this country, prevail in this election, it will be nothing short of a miracle.
Mm-hmm. If we, meaning Americans who love this country, because, you know, she's... You, me, us, we don't love this country. We don't. No, just don't. Because if we loved this country, we'd be in church and we'd be upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-banging, hay-shaking, upstanding, God-centered, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, ammosexuals now, wouldn't we? Of course we would. But it'll be, if they can just save America, it'll be a miracle. But what's going to happen if the miracle doesn't transpire? What's going to happen if God is too busy helping football teams score touchdowns to look down and realize how badly we need Trump? Huh? What, Sandy? What, Sandy?
Yeah, you know, there's so many issues. You mentioned the illegal immigration issue. Well, the governor of Virginia, McAuliffe, you know, he's the one that wanted all the felons to be able to vote.
Yes, he did.
So he was trying
to... He actually made it possible, and then the courts had to stop him.
Yeah, the courts had to stop him, and then... So you're right. This may be, you know, I always hate to say this is the last...
Isn't that awful? It's the end of Merca. He wanted all the felons to vote. And out there in Merca land... Emery and Eileen are just sitting there in their Barca loungers, nodding at each other. That's right. He's one of them Damon Kratz, and he wanted the felons to vote. And they never even stopped to ask why a felon shouldn't vote. They just think that that's a national thing, not something that's largely relegated to the old Confederacy and is used as yet another manifestation of Jim Crow to make sure that, you know, those people... less of them, you know, that they can keep at least some of them from voting by, oh, I don't know, busting them for felony possession of a doobie. Remember, we're talking about Virginia here, the Old Dominion. Mm-hmm. All kinds of felonies over there for the wrong coloreds. Yeah. They're letting the felons vote. The criminals and the dope smokers.
Mm-hmm. Last chance.
I believe it
to
is.
To stop
actually.
Something. Well, you should know. You've followed this for a long time. Secular progressivism versus constitutional conservatism. So this may be the last.
Hey, hold on. Hold on just a damn minute there, Murgatroyd. Secular progressivism versus constitutional conservatism. Why, to hear that dichotomy set up that way, you'd swear that progressive people don't even think there's a constitution. Not even the parts that we like. You know, like that equal protection of the law and substantive and procedural due process and the freedom of the press. And of course, in constitutional conservatism, the only part of the Constitution that matters is the holy sacred Second Amendment. The one that guarantees the right of all Americans to have lots of guns. I mean, the white ones, at least. And by white ones, I mean all the white ones, even the mentally ill white ones. Mm-hmm. Secular progressivism versus constitutional conservatism. Because we don't got no constitution. We don't need one. Of course not. But you were saying, Tim Wildman? What's up, Doc?
Last chance to stop these people from completely overtaking our country.
Yeah, there's so much at stake.
Other than that, everything's good.
Yeah.
Everything's good.
You know, plus...
Apart from that, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln?
It's the blatant reports on the loss of religious freedom. And actually, Tim, to make it very personal, I've said this to you privately. All of us that are conservative and believe in traditional marriage, believe that the life of the unborn is should be defended, are going to be in the crosshairs of the IRS.
Wait, the IRS has crosshairs? Don't crosshairs go on scopes? Don't scopes go on rifles? The IRS? There's a secret IRS sniper patrol? Okay. And what else? What else, Sandy Rios?
All of the, even the FBI now. We cannot, we can't trust our federal agencies. And we are going to be, all, many of us, in fact, in inside circles in D.C., we're always saying we're going to be in re-education camps. And really, that's not a quantum leap.
No, that's just a wild-eyed, insane fantasy, Sandy. Sandy! They're going to be put in re-education camps. Yeah, how are we going to get them there? I mean, are we going to kidnap them and slap a diaper on them and fly, you know, kind of like we did with, you know, various and sundry innocent goat herders in Afghanistan? When we get them there, are we going to cram liquefied food up their butts? Like we did with various and sundry people from Afghanistan? Are we going to suspend them over barrels of water and immerse them and then swear we're not waterboarding because it's not like they were strapped to anything? Are we going to reduce their already severely limited minds to cerebral gravy like we did when we tortured people from George W. Bush's filthy little illegal wars? Is that what's going to happen to the Sandy Rioses of the world? I guess. I mean, we can hope. Oh, I didn't catch that, by Jove. Brother Deacon Asa is listening intently and says, you know, Tim Wildman didn't even say constitutional conservatism. He said conservativism. I think he's a longtime practitioner of the art of word knowing. Oh, I don't. Ye gods. You know, here in inside circles in D.C., we're always saying we're going to be in re-education camps. Yeah, that's what they say when they get together and they're talking over about their, you know, sixth Cosmo or their sixth martini or margarita or mojito or name your poison. I don't know. There's sixth little shooter of holy water. Oh, come on. Strychnine. But the goddess of irony is good. She's very good. I see one of these freaks in the wild, and boom, today I get this. She is a good goddess. She's a very good goddess. And they can't trust the FBI, you know, because Negroes. Oh, I know, brethren and sistren. But that's not all. You know, this was supposed to be a very big day. It was supposed to be a very big day for WikiLeaks. Never worry, don't you fear, for WikiLeaks will soon be here. But not so much. Yeah, all the wackadoodles were waiting on pins and needles with bated breath for the because Julian Assange, publicity junkie, had promised a document release today that would bring about criminal charges against Hillary Clinton. The devil! Yeah, I haven't done that in a while. Just to let you... that's right, just to keep you honest. Mm-hmm. There's a big document dump coming. Big document dump. And, then it didn't happen. There was an early morning press conference, but it was more like, you know, tea and tiffin with Julian. This did not go over well with Alex Jones. Not at all well. You didn't put the hockey puck away, did you? Yeah, I sure hope not.
Is this the death of WikiLeaks? I mean, are we? We
Crunch breaks stuff every day.
We thought we were about to have a rebirth. We thought we were going to have like a new explosion of WikiLeaks, and now are we seeing the exact opposite?
This is Hillary's October surprise.
Come on,
Julian Assange. Trolling the world is Hillary's October surprise.
Come on, Assange.
Julian Assange is a Hillary butt plug.
Is this the...
I just have to hear that again, if you don't mind.
October surprise.
Come on, Assange.
Julian Assange is a Hillary butt plug.
Julian Assange is a Hillary butt plug. Hillary butt plug.
I mean, doesn't this go out over, like, for-profit radio? Doesn't this go out on the public airwaves? You can say butt plug on the... I mean, we can say it on the interweb tubes. That's part of why we're here, so we don't have to hit the magic button on the booger box all the time. You can say butt plug and not worry. Not just any butt plug. A Hillary butt plug. And you're right, Hoghead, in the chat room.
Mommy, what's a butt plug?
Because this is broadcast during family listening hours. Yeah, just like back when Flush Flimball would, and he probably still loves to tell it, there'd be a story about some trans person out there, and Flush would tell his favorite joke that the punchline to which is, it's called an added dick to me. Yeah.
Mommy?
Yeah. So apparently the standards are getting a little looser with the FCC. If in fact you can, that thing goes out over the public airwaves and right. And so then this happens. It gets worse. They realize that the Hillary butt plug is not going to
help. We've been wiki rolled. That's what they're saying on Twitter.
Wiki rolled. We've been wiki rolled.
Wiki rolled.
Instead of
who bought them TVs, bitch? Tell me that. Move, bitch. Get out the way. Get out the way, bitch. Get out the way. Move, bitch. Get out the way. I mean, you get out the way, man. What?
I'd say what are they smoking? But I don't think you can smoke anything and get that wasted. Hi. Mm-hmm. Hey, I warned you, it's Titanic Tuesday, right? Don't say I didn't. I guess I'm just sort of culturally, I don't listen to nearly as much hip hop, I guess, as what Alex Jones does.
Hillary butt plug.
Meanwhile, Thomas with a question. With the Hillary butt plug, was anal jihad lube used? I hope so. You can get it at Amen Apps. Glory, I think. Scott and Punky. Courts? They said courts? Hold on. What was that last part? The courts had to stop him? Are you talking about letting the felons vote? I thought these twerps didn't believe that courts had a role in sorting things out. Unelected judges in black robes forcing their heathen deviant ways upon us. Well, I guess they do, says Scott, but only when it's a ruling they happen to like. You know, like Bush v. Gore. Well, there we go. Suddenly it all begins to make sense. Michael in Madison asks, is Alex Jones on PCP, perhaps? Well, it's a good thing he's not a good thing he's not a black man, because even being suspected of being on PCP can get you all dead in places like Tulsa. Titanic Tuesday. You know, you think you know what it's going, and then some, what you think you got the program lined up, and then the right wing hands you a rewrite 30 minutes before airtime. It can be a little loopy at times, but sometimes you're just terribly, terribly grateful for it. I mean, some people, I guess, I don't think I'm one of them, would actually like to see Alex Jones and Sandy Rios in a re-education camp. You'd like to, yeah, just to try to, but then you'd have to sort out the philosophical question of whether or not subjecting Alex Jones and Sandy Rios to anything resembling education could ever qualify to have the prefix RE put in front of it. Because to be re-educated implies that somewhere along the way you've been educated. And there's just not a lot of empirical data out there to suggest that either of those two ever have been. But let's move along from places like InfoWars and the American Family Association Radio Network to a more respectable broadcast outlet. I mean, if I walk into the Jiffy Lube or the doctor's office or where the hell ever, and there's a TV in the waiting room, I'm always pleasantly surprised when it's not on Fox. And I've even suggested from time to time to various and sundry proprietors, look, put that damn thing on the Weather Channel. Everybody can agree that it's fun to watch the weather. And we don't tend to get into nearly as many Donnybrooks over it. So, you know, good idea, right? Hello, Weather Channel meteorologist Jen Delgado. Monday evening, with Hurricane Matthew careening through the Caribbean, up past the Windward Isles, blowing across the western end of Hispaniola and the eastern end of Cuba, going hell-bent for leather toward South Carolina stand, where South Carolina Governor Nimrata, not really named Nikki Haley, but afraid to tell anybody that because it's South Carolina after all, and they ain't going to elect nobody named Nimrata. South Carolina Governor Nimrata Haley has already declared a state of emergency today. She's ordered the evacuation of more than 1 million people in the Lowcountry coastal areas of South Carolina stand. All because Hurricane Matthew, which crossed Haiti as a Category 4 hurricane, she took to the airwaves to fairly beg people to get at least 100 miles away from the South Carolina coastal area. She's on the verge of mobilizing about 1,800 members of the South Carolina Stand National Guard. During the evacuation, all the highways will be directed out away from the endangered area. By late Friday night, it's expected to be a Cat 2 or a Cat 3 hurricane when it reaches the coastal areas of South Carolina. 100-mile-an-hour winds, 5 to 7 foot storm surges. They're evacuating Myrtle Beach. I imagine Charleston's hunkering down. Governor Nathan Deal has issued a state of emergency for 13 counties in the coastal portion of Georgistan. I mention all of that as prologue to what Jen Delgado, meteorologist with the Weather Channel, offered up Monday night as she talked about Matthew's progress across Haiti. Now, I can only trust that you did not put away the hockey puck. I'd probably get a... I'd get another length of duct tape out for this, too. This really is Titanic quality.
Patients picking up maybe 30 to 40 inches of rainfall. We're really concerned about Haiti. So we look at the area of Dominican Republic, and you notice what's different in this NASA image. You see all brown here and then green to the east. That's because this whole area has been essentially deforested. They take all the trees down. They burn the trees. Even the kids there, they're so hungry, they actually eat the trees. Now, we talk about the damage that could happen with Haiti.
That's why Haiti's deforested. You didn't know it. You never suspected it. The deforestation of Haiti is a huge element within the horrifying conditions that exist there. It's bizarre that two countries could share one island and be so radically different from one another. But it's because of the feral children in Haiti, the feral tree-eating children in Haiti. I guess in Haiti, it's kind of like what Jed Clampett said about the birth of Jethro Bodine, born with a full set of teeth, just like a beaver. That's not a comedy bit. Ms. Delgado actually said that in Haiti, the hungry children eat trees. Medical people, you want to help here? I mean, sure, if you buy a loaf of Wonder Bread, motto, it's a wonder anyone can eat it, you might find the word cellulose in the recipe somewhere. Pencil shavings. Wood fibers. But to just sit down and snack on a sapling, I don't think there's anybody within the human experiential realm who actually has the digestive constitution to eat trees. I mean, damn. What are we talking? Lord of the Flies? The CEO of the Weather Channel is David Clark. He eventually got wind of Ms. Delgado's assertion of the little-known tree-eating children of Haiti. And David Clark said via Twitter to a woman who wrote in a mite perturbed about the idea of feral tree-eating Haitian children. And he said, my name's David Clark, the president of the Weather Channel. David Kenny forwarded your message to me regarding Haiti. We're terribly sorry for the on-air error, and we're taking measures to correct it. It should not have happened, period. But here's the thing. How do you take measures? I mean, what kind of measures are taken with Jen Delgado to make sure she doesn't accuse any more children of being, well, you know, little bipedal termites? Yes, Mr. Clark? Send Jen Delgado into my office, please. What in the wide, wide world of sports were you thinking, Jen? Where the children eat trees. Listen. You're good at what you do. I mean, you do the weather. You stand and you point at a green screen and you talk about weather stuff. Because, you know, we're the Weather Channel. But, Jen, there aren't any tree-eating people anywhere. Look. Just because you put bamboo shoots on your salad every day, that you know, those aren't trees. Jen, promise me now, today, and forevermore, that when the little red light goes on the camera and you're doing your weather meteorology stuff here at the Weather Channel, promise me right now and forevermore that you're not going to refer to any more tree-eating children in Haiti or for that matter, anywhere else. I mean, I don't want to hear about any tree-eating people in Washington State either. And you know what? Tree-eating Filipinos are out, too, and tree-eating Malaysians. And, well, I guess we don't have to worry about you talking about any tree-eating people in the Arabian Peninsula because, I mean, you know, it's the Arabian Peninsula. But, goddamn, Jen, really? We are taking steps at the Weather Channel to make sure this never happens again. I sure hope not. This is one of those, because back, you know, back before I became a cord cutter, I would happily watch the Weather Channel. It would just sort of be the background noise of my world sometimes. And if I'd had cable last night when this happened, and I'd heard that, that'd have been one of them moments when I hollered for Ferg and said, "Son, get me a grilled peanut butter and banana sandwich and the Elvis gun. I'm a shooting the TV again." Where the children are so hungry, they eat the trees. And I'm sure that was designed. Listen, let's cut Jen Delgado some slack. That was probably meant to emphasize the dire level of poverty in Haiti. But here's a little secret. The poverty of Haiti is not caused by beaver-toothed children. And by the way, the beavers don't eat the trees either. They're just... No, oh, stop it. Stop it, Spock. The actual deforestation of Haiti is a dire problem. It contributes greatly to the agonies of that nation. And Haiti's misery is all wrapped up in something we talk about from time to time here, called capitalism. All right, it may be time for a retraction. Ron, in the soon-to-be-frozen and in the soon-to-be frozen north. It says, my recently departed mom could have cooked one of those trees until it was soft enough to eat. I didn't know that green beans were still green after cooking. Time out. I'll get this right in a minute. I didn't know that green beans were still green after cooking until I started going to church dinners. I thought they turned sort of white and hung limply on each side of the fork. Cook a little more, Mama. Still got color. Yeah, Ron thought they were called green beans because the inventor's name was Mr. Green. Oh, I've been looking forward to these 3 hours all day long. Green beans, green trees. Used to eat guitars and now he's only... No, he used to eat bars, and now he's only eating guitar, Cadillacs and Subaru. Oh, God. And this is just the tip of the Titanic Tuesday iceberg, of course. We got lots and lots. I don't know if we're going to top tree-eating feral children in Haiti, but damned if we won't try. So give it some... Give it some consideration. And in the meantime, we'll take a little break. You know, I hate doing this, but here it is. It's 3 minutes before the hour. And well, we try to raise $200 every evening, and we're at zero. That's true. Steve from Georgistan pointing out bark is high in fiber. I don't know. You're right, Stockton, Larry. Jen Delgado may be... There may be no hope. Where does that even come from? Haiti is deforested by children who eat trees. I mean, do they sort of shinny up the trunk and start at the top and work their way down, or do they gnaw through them at the base and let them fall over and then just sort of go at them at their leisure? Stop telling us how to eat trees, Bob! Yeah, so let's take a break, and hopefully we will not stay at the zero level for fundraising this evening and go to work on a prayer meeting Wednesday goose egg. Over at headonradionetwork.com is the PayPal button. And, of course, there's always the U.S. mails, too. Steve in New York, subject line, eating trees. No, Bob, it's the ants. That's who ate the trees. Well, damn, that's cannibalism, Steve! It's only getting worse. All right. So it being Tuesday and all, we have the Green News Report coming up from Brad Friedman and Desi Doy, and I always look forward to that. We'll take a break, and hopefully when we come back, we won't still be at zero. That would be lovely. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Oh, yes, it is. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. You saw this coming from a mile off, didn't you? You had to. We'll be right back.
right down and lands on the ground. And out comes the man from Mars. And you try to run, but you got a gun. And he shoots you dead and he eats your head. And then you're in the man from Mars. You go out at night eating cars. You eat Cadillacs, Lincolns too, Mercurys and Subaru. And you don't stop, you keep on eating cars. Then when there's no more cars, you go out at night and eat up bars. Where the people meet face to face, there's cheek to cheek, one to one, man to man, there's toe to toe. Don't move too slow, cause the man from Mars is through with cars. He's eating bars, yeah, wall to wall, door to door, hall to hall, he's gonna eat them all. Rapture, be pure, take a tour, through the sword, don't strain your brain, pain to train, you'll be singing in the rain. Said don't stop, do punk rock. Cause the man from Mars stopped eating cars and eating bars, and now he only eats guitars. Yeah.
What about the trees? It's Tuesday, October 4, 2016.
U.S. officials in the meantime are urging Americans in the storm's path to get out now while they still can.
Two new hurricanes breaking records in the Atlantic and Pacific.
It is completely unprecedented from a constitutional perspective. It's completely unprecedented from a legal perspective.
House Science Committee Chair now investigating the SEC for investigating Exxon. India signs on to the Paris Agreement, plus the City of Angels gets on the path to 100% renewable electricity.
Hey, that's us.
Yeah.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Winds reaching 130 miles per hour prompted the U.S. military to evacuate nearly 700 military families from Guantanamo Bay.
Wow, it sure is easy to get Americans out of Guantanamo Bay quickly. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, not one, but two crazy record massive hurricanes going on right now.
I know. Here we go again. Yep. As we go to air, two new major hurricanes, both breaking records. First, in the Atlantic, Jamaica and Haiti are getting drenched by Hurricane Matthew, which intensified at record speed to a Category 5 over the weekend in just a little over 24 hours. It also broke the record for the farthest south any hurricane has ever been seen in the Atlantic Ocean Basin. Haiti is particularly vulnerable, even without a direct hit from Hurricane Matthew, because its infrastructure remains damaged from the 2010 earthquake. Some 50,000 people are still living in temporary tent shelters after the earthquake, and aid groups say flooding from Hurricane Matthew will set back efforts to end a cholera epidemic. in the Pacific.
Super Typhoon Chaba is a beast of a storm. It is the equivalent of a Category 5 hurricane on the Saffir-Simpson scale, winds 165 miles per hour.
Typhoon Chaba also intensified in the Pacific with blinding speed into Category 5 super typhoon status. It is now the most intense hurricane on record to hit the western islands of Japan since record keeping began in the 1960s.
So we've got two hurricanes, both of them massive, and both of them taking very different paths than hurricanes usually take?
Yes, most likely due to warming oceans, which has pretty much changed what used to be the normal path of hurricanes.
The new normal. What fun.
Here in the U.S., an escalation in investigations into what oil giant ExxonMobil knew about climate change science and when it knew it versus what it said publicly and to its shareholders. The Wall Street Journal reports that the federal U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission is now investigating Exxon.
Good.
How the company is valuing the future worth of its oil reserves amid efforts to cut fossil fuels and emissions around the world. And also, the SEC is investigating why Exxon hasn't readjusted the value of its current reserves to shareholders after the crash in global oil prices, like the other big oil companies have done.
Really? Only Exxon hasn't?
Right.
Imagine that.
In response to that reported SEC investigation, the chairman of the U.S. House Science Committee, Republican Lamar Smith, of Texas, is escalating his defense of Exxon by investigating the SEC. Representative Smith, who has subpoenaed state attorneys general in New York and Massachusetts over their Exxon investigations, has now requested that the chairman of the SEC turn over all documents containing any information about the purpose, scope, or origin of the SEC's inquiry into Exxon.
So the Science Committee is continually investigating people who are actually looking into Exxon's misrepresentation of science.
Yep.
And the committee is investigating the investigators instead of the people who lied about the science.
That's right.
Unbelievable.
Meanwhile, the world is moving ahead with big international climate action. India, the world's third largest emitter of carbon dioxide, formally ratified the United Nations' historic Paris Climate Agreement on Sunday, the birthday of Mahatma Gandhi. The countries now signed on to the accord represent 52% of global emissions, just shy of the second threshold for enactment, which is 55%.
So if countries with 55% of the world's emissions sign on, this deal is done, it goes through, it's in force for at least the next 4 years.
Right.
Trump-proof.
Finally, the Los Angeles City Council has voted to get on the path to 100% renewable electricity. It's ordered the city-owned electric company to map out the plan. City leaders are taking aggressive measures to reduce the city's use of natural gas after that historic record natural gas leak at a storage facility in Porter Ranch earlier this year, which revealed the city's vulnerability to supply disruptions. LA has also hired Tesla to build a huge new utility-scale battery storage project to deliver clean electricity at night.
So LA is going to have 100% renewable energy at some point in the near future?
That's right.
I'm going to start planting my survival seeds now. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Ten past the hour as we move into hour number two of this Titanic Tuesday, which is an embarrassment of riches. Before we go any further, thanks go out to Charlie and to Steve, Karen, and Cletus. We now have only $165 to go. Sorry, I was just doing some ciphering on the fly. Only $165 to go to knock out fundraising for the evening. Thank you very, very kindly, and hopefully you'll get some company in fairly short order. Thanks again very, very much, Charlie and Steve, Karen, and Cletus. Titanic Tuesday is dedicated, of course, to titanic moments of right-wing intellect. And when it comes to right-wing intellect, well, there's a hashtag. Michael and Madison is well familiar with it. It's called, the hashtag is Don't Feel the Johnson. Gary Johnson, after his Aleppo moment, as he calls it, which he thinks is not some poor shattered soul carrying the body of his or her beloved child out of the rubble of that ancient city, but instead is sort of a brain fart. The Libertarian nominee for president, who doubled down by saying he couldn't name any leader in the world that he admired, I can. Monsieur Trudeau in Canada. I think I admire him. Absolutely. I mean, that's just one, but yeah. Granted, there's a lot of right-wing asshats running governments, but that shouldn't have slowed Gary Johnson down. He's a right-wing asshat, too. It's easier for him than it is for me. You know what I mean? So, for reasons that pass understanding, they booked Gary Johnson on MSNBC, where he got a little... got a little testy. You didn't put the hockey puck away, did you? No, good.
You know, when it comes to talking about a foreign leader that you respect, that you admire, I have a hard time with that one. That's politics. That's just who I am. So now I'm going to have to pick out a world leader, and there's going to be something that's wrong with them, and now I'm going to have to defend them? Well, maybe I think too much.
Well, by the same token, you're running to be commander-in-chief, foreign policy, and unexpected
events.
Yeah, and here's...
Yeah, time out, okay? Because that's Mrs. Greenspan. You're running... no, Mrs. Greenspan. And how icky is this that I find myself in the position of defending Gary Johnson? Don't defend the Johnson. No, Mrs. Greenspan, he is not running to be commander-in-chief. He is running for the office of President of the United States of America, and it's hacks like you who have devalued the full value of the presidency by reducing it to a singular constitutional function. I have yet to see a sign for, you know, Benito Cheeto or the devil or anyone else that says, vote, name here, for commander-in-chief. Have you? No? I saw a new sticker today. I do not like the fact that I'm spending so damn much time at Hellmart. But at least it's sort of a cultural... education? Because, you know, you see all kinds of fun stuff now. That's true. Earthers is... Now, see, if she'd been asked the question, Sarah Palin would have been smarter and more slick. I like all of them, Charlie. All the good ones. Yeah. That's very true, Earther. But this business of commander-in-chief deserves a minute or two, because the right wing, I think they fixate and get some sort of little right wing stiffy over being commander in chief. Remember when Dim Leader strutted around with his padded crotch and his commander in chief jacket on there on the deck of the USS Abraham Lincoln that was that they actually had to turn in the ocean so that people would think he was being a hero and flying far out to sea, when in fact, had the camera angle been different, you would have seen San Diego in the background. Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution of the United States reads as follows. The President shall be Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy of the United States and of the militia of the several states when called into the actual service of the United States. He may require the opinion, not shall, but may, in writing, of the principal officer in each of the executive departments upon any subject relating to the duties of their respective offices, and he shall have the power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment. Section 2 is the delineation of the powers that may be exercised by the President. Section 3 is duties imposed upon him. But that's it. The President shall be Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy of the United States and of the militia of the several states when called into the actual service of the United States. Semicolon. That's it. That's all there is about being Commander-in-Chief. But Mrs. Greenspan, when she sees the, why, there strides the Commander-in-Chief. Why doesn't she think, why, there stands the man with the power to fill up vacancies. Because that gets its own sentence too. And that is a co-equal exercise of power to the commander-in-chief power as exercised by the President of the United States under Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution of the United States. But this is part of the militarization of the presidency. The President of the United States does not hold military rank. Commander-in-Chief is not even a military rank. It is merely a function of what it means to be President of the United States. And so Mrs. Greenspan's question, or assertion, I should say, is 100% pure, unadulterated horseshit. You'd almost swear that Mrs. Greenspan actually knows not very much about the Constitution. In many ways, this is a question far more about, or this is a clip, Titanic Tuesday-wise, far more about Mrs. Greenspan than it is about Mr. Johnson.
By the same token, you're running to be commander-in-chief. Foreign policy and unexpected events are a big part of the portfolio.
No, dumbass. And I don't feel bad about calling Mrs. Greenspan a dumbass, because we just went through Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution of the United States. Now, you'll note that she thinks that being commander-in-chief has something to do with the execution of foreign policy. It doesn't. Arguably, the United States military may be an element of foreign policy. Oh, who was it that said, war is politics by other means? And somebody else said, power flows from the muzzle of a gun. Shh. I know who said those things, but don't tell the wingnuts. They get off on those ideas, and they'd be terribly, terribly upset if they found out who said it first. You know, too. Meanwhile, with regard to the whole Aleppo fiasco, Brother Deacon Asa out in far Vancouver says, everyone knows you feed Aleppo to your dog once in the morning and once in the evening. Sorry. But behold the for-profit media. Now, Mrs. Greenspan, Andrea Mitchell, is at the top of the heap. She's the senior exalted 32nd degree noble lumpkin of the reporting staff at NBC News. And yet this woman doesn't even know that foreign policy does not flow from the president's status as commander-in-chief, which is something the president only becomes in relation to what he does vis-a-vis the military. Let's be very clear about this. I don't care if the president of the United States is Jill Stein. Jill Stein, nor Barack Obama, nor Hillary Clinton, nor Gary Johnson, nor the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. Well, he might like to be. He might try to transform the presidency in that direction. The president of the United States is never, within the meaning of the Constitution, never the commander-in-chief of the people of the United States. You, wherever you are, doing whatever you do, if you are a citizen of the United States, unless you are a member of the military or of the National Guard or the reserves, and those only when called to active duty, you don't have a commander-in-chief. And arguably, the commander-in-chief fetishization of the presidency, and granted, Mrs. Greenspan is not the only one to engage in this fetishization, is dangerous. Because and Jefferson, Adams, Washington would be aghast. Lincoln would be aghast at the idea of the presidency focused upon the Article 2, Section 2, Commander-in-Chief language, because that fetishization transforms the presidency from what Washington called the chief magistracy to a military dictator. You get that? You see that? The president is only the commander-in-chief of the active-duty military and the reserves and the National Guard when they are federalized or called to active service in the case of the reserves. He is never, and constitutionally can never be. And should he or she try to be commander-in-chief of the ordinary hoi polloi citizenry of the United States, would be subject to impeachment. Because the president would then be trying to transform the presidency into something that it is not. And one may argue that that would be a high crime within the meaning of the Constitution, because it would smell an awful lot like, dare we say it, treason. But practitioners of the for-profit media, like Mrs. Greenspan, they love them some power. And they worship at the feet of power. And in a way, no wonder Gary Johnson got a little bit pissy. I think I might too.
Well, by the same token, you're running to be commander-in-chief. Foreign policy and unexpected events are a big part of the portfolio.
Yeah, and you know what? And the fact that somebody can dot the I's and cross the T's on a foreign leader or a geographic location then allows them to put our military in harm's way. You were talking about PTSD earlier. We put our military in this horrible situation where we go in and support regime change. They get involved in civil wars where hundreds of thousands of innocent people are in a crossfire. We're literally shooting at ourselves because we support both sides of conflict, Syria as
herein, we have proof that Gary Johnson is not ready for prime time. Because were Gary Johnson libertarian, remember, libertarian, big L libertarian, were he ready for prime time, he would have said something to Mrs. Greenspan along the lines of what I said. Like, you know, listen, lady, that commander-in-chief crap you just spouted is unconstitutional, anti-democratic, and anti-American. Learn a little bit about the country you live in for a change. I'm not running to be commander-in-chief. I'm running for president. And the presidency of the United States is not solely defined by the exercise of the military powers, such as they are under the Constitution, of the presidency. I'm a libertarian, madam, and I'm into the Constitution and its plain interpretive language. And while you apparently want a president who's a military dictator, I do not support that notion. Had he schooled this septuagenarian bimbo, Mrs. Greenspan, sorry about the bimbo remark. That's no offense to bimbos. The septuagenarian twit, Mrs. Greenspan, I would have taken him a lot more seriously. Let's run over and check in with Todd. What's happening, Todd?
Hey, Bob. How are you today?
I'm pretty good. I'm more concerned with how you are with the storm coming. Are you out of harm's way?
You know, we really don't know yet, but we've been advised to get water and things like that because, of course, you know, we like small state structure here, and our infrastructure is not up to...
Small government! Yeehaw!
Small government.
But I mean, are you 100 miles inland?
Yeah, we're right in the middle of the state, you know, right near the capital. But yeah, it's this thing with the highways, like I-26, it's a big deal because there's only a few large interstates that lead down to the low country. And, you were cracking me up with Nikki Haley.
You mean Nimrata?
Yeah, you're on fire. Oh my God! Just remember,
after the hurricane passes, everybody's going to pick themselves up by their own bootstraps, Todd, because we want small government constitutional conservatism.
Ain't that some shit? And it's the southern states that always got their fucking hand out when something happens.
No, they like them some big government when the water's up to their goddamn chins.
Oh man, you see, I need to pick your constitutional lobe tonight a little bit. And it's so funny you brought that up about the Constitution.
Well, it's all, you know, the Constitution you have always with you. It's sort of playing in the background to everything that happens in our body politic, Todd.
Well, it's supposed to be. I mean, theoretically, right? I mean, if we want to have a functioning republic as it's supposed to be. But, yeah, it's so much.
That's the problem. That's the problem, though, Todd. People, these white wingers, I'm a constitutional conservativist, and I want small constitutional government. But none of them actually have ever read the thing. And it's not that long.
I don't think so. And the way they have it structured, it's like, oh, what section do I have to go to figure this out? It's not that fucking hard. You know, it's
well,
like
I mean, they laid it out in a nice, orderly fashion. You know, there's the preamble, and then you get the legislative in Article 1, and you get the executive in Article 2, and then you get the judiciary in Article 3. And
exactly.
I mean, it's not like it's not like the framers smoked some Jimson weed and just started writing the stream of consciousness poetry.
Why did you bring that up? I was thinking about it. I heard it yesterday, and I was thinking about Jimson weed because I know I commented the other day about why people use certain drugs, and that's the reason Jimson weed never caught on, because it's fucking dangerous.
Yes, it is.
See, that's the reason people use certain drugs.
Morning glory seeds too.
Yeah, but I don't want to get out. You know, I'm easily distracted.
Yeah, we're not going to do that.
Stay on task.
Okay, constitutional stuff. That's where we were, Todd.
Right. So I'm a little bit irritated. I'm trying not to be irritated, but I've had enough. Right. Okay. In theory, we have these three branches of government that are supposed to offset each other so that we don't have coups and insurgencies and our government moves slowly and deliberately and the money stays correct, you know, things like that. Is that right? Is that a good...
Stability, the Constitution values stability above all things, and that's why it's designed to make sure, that's why you've got multiple branches and the idea of checks and balances to keep anybody from just going batshit crazy.
Right. Okay.
So any one branch. I mean, to a certain extent, Todd, we can argue that it works, because even though the Congress of the United States is crazier than a sprayed roach, I mean, madder than bugs at a decon party, they haven't been able to completely destroy the country.
But see, you're going where I'm going with this. This is my question, because obviously you are more of a constitutional scholar than I am. I mean, I'm okay, but, you know, I'm what you call, like you say, a lifelong learner. And I think when people have closed minds, that's a problem. You gotta learn. Oh, you never too old to learn. But this is what I do not understand. It seems like somehow, I don't know if it was because of the black guy in the White House. Could be, I don't know. But it seems like the most powerful branch of government right now is the House of Representatives.
Well, in a dysfunctional government, the most powerful branch of government is the branch that is the most intransigent.
Well, that's that. That would be right. Now, they appropriate funds, and we need funds to move the government. But they have just broken our government, and I'm concerned about the Supreme Court. This is what I'm concerned about. Because these people are absolutely, they have lost their fucking mind. Because I've been thinking about this. Now, any other contract that you engage in this country, when, you know, we're talking legalese, when, you know, you remember, language is precise. That's why people, lawyers go and usually major in English, because you have to be precise with your language, because language means a lot.
Well, as we were reminded during the travails of Bill Clinton in the 90s, you couldn't turn on a damn radio without hearing Flush Flimball scream, "My friends, words mean things."
Oh, God.
Sorry.
Oh, and Mike Pence said he's like Rush Limbaugh. Did you hear that?
He volunteered that information? They didn't waterboard that out of him?
Yes.
It's proud of it, is he?
Yes. Sorry, I'm yelling. Yes.
That's okay. You got a hurricane coming, man. You can yell.
All right, this is what I don't understand. Any other contract you engage in this country, when the contract says an entity or a person shall, that means you're compelled to by law.
Yeah, shall brooks no argument.
Right.
So, that's mandatory language.
That's mandatory language. And you know what? And so the next word, and you know I'm going with this, is the Congress is supposed to shall advise and consent.
No, that's just the Senate, man.
But wait a minute. Now, consent, now, in my way of thinking, consent, it can be a negative consent or a positive consent. You can say yes or no.
Well,
right?
advise and consent. It's and first of all. First of all, it's conjunctive. They got to do both things in order for a judge to become a judge.
Mm-hmm. Right.
With the and the exact language, I think, is with the advice and consent. Okay.
So who's keeping the House of Representatives? In other words, who's keeping them in check? Because they're obviously not doing their job. And I don't know who's interpreting. Who gave them the, who? In other words, who's going to keep them honest? Because they are not following the Constitution with this bullshit. I don't give a fuck what that fucking turtle-looking motherfucker says. Okay? Mitch McConnell is ridiculous. You know, his reasoning, it holds no water.
Well, no, there's a compelling argument out there that silence is the performance of that duty as well. Now, it used to be, for instance, that the president could appoint somebody in during the recess of the Senate. But the Supreme Court struck that down.
I remember that.
But during a recess, the presumption was that by going into recess, that the Senate had said, well, you know, do your damnedest. We're taking a break. Now it doesn't.
Yeah, then they had but see, then they couldn't figure out break and recess. You know, what would, you know, we'll go back to.
But the, you know, but the actual language of Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2, Paragraph 2, rather. He shall have the power. Okay, so it's not may. He's definitely got it. By and with, and those are two different prepositions that mean entirely separate things. The advice and consent of the Senate. And then there's a bunch of stuff he can do. Shall appoint, okay, bunch of people, judges of the Supreme Court. And that's it. I mean, there's like ambassadors and you know, admirals of the ocean sea. And no, that's not in there. Ambassadors and ministers and consuls and judges of the Supreme Court. And all other officers of the United States. So, in a way, you got, okay, so he shall have the power. Let's read this broken down since you've raised the issue. He shall have the power by the advice and consent of the Senate. But here's where it gets interesting. Or he shall have the power with the advice and consent of the Senate. But you know what comes after that? To make treaties provided two-thirds of the Senate present concur, semicolon.
Oh, boy.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then we get to, and he shall nominate, and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate. And there's no and in that first clause. After how shall have the power. So, and he shall nominate, and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, shall appoint judges of the Supreme Court. And that's where it ends. So, what happens when the Senate refuses to act?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
One of the most ancient principles in the English common law, as it had developed before it ever came across the Atlantic Ocean, was that idea that silence is acceptance.
If you say nothing, that means you're accepting.
Yeah, you're acquiescing.
Correct.
So right. There are some highfalutin legal scholars, including somebody at Yale, who sits around thinking important thoughts all day long, every day, who says that Merrick Garland should simply put on his black robe there at the D.C. Circuit and tell his executive administrative assistant, I'm going for a stroll, and walk his happy ass into the Supreme Court of the United States and say, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. Let the bells ring out and the banners fly. It's too good to be true. Feast your eyes on me. I'm here. and sit down and be a justice of the Supreme Court, because the Senate of the United States has had low, yea, verily, since February, and then in March the nomination was made. So they have had 10 minus 3 is 7 months in which to advise and consent, and have remained silent throughout it.
They've abdicated their duties. They've been silent.
They've consented.
Silence
is consent. And the thing is, because they have not so much as held a hearing on it, because there has not been a vote, they, no matter how many times Turtle Man gets up and says, well, we just don't think the Negro should be allowed to appoint another justice. Just because he's done that in front of cameras, that does not constitute actual performance of a duty under the Constitution by the Senate of the United States. I mean, I mentioned this the other night, Todd, you know, a court speaks only through its orders. The Senate speaks only through its deliberative actions taken in session. Okay? Mm-hmm. So Judge Roy Moore can say, I want, down in Alabama, I want the homosexuals to never be able to get married. But that doesn't mean that he's overridden the declared published order of the Supreme Court of the United States, A, because he doesn't have the power, and B, because he was speaking ex cathedra.
Well, but who can hold the House accountable?
Senate. Because obviously Senate, Todd, Senate. We're talking about the Senate here.
Okay, well,
the Senate does all of this. Who can hold them accountable? The theory on that is that only the voters. Now, here's where that becomes a problem. I was actually listening to National Petroleum Radio the other day as I was driving home, and I heard some exalted political thinker that they were talking to say that where once upon a time, months ago, Democrats thought, boy, I tell you what, this is going to be a hot-button issue in the election. The guy said, no. Something like less than 13% of the American people even remotely give up what happens with the Supreme Court nomination. Nobody's out there thinking about it. Nobody's out there having the Supreme Court nominations. You know how many times we've talked about the power of the president to appoint people to the Supreme Court on this program, and everybody says, "Oh, yeah, it's very important. It's terribly important." That's where that 13% number comes from. Less than 13% of the American people actually give up about the president appointing Supreme Court justices, Republican and Democrat alike.
Yeah, I did keep saying, I'm just, you know, I'm so preoccupied with Eddie Munster. I shouldn't call people names, but I'm just so preoccupied with how the House has been operating. Yeah, I'm sorry, it is the Senate, but.
But the thing is, the Supreme Court is not an issue. And so since nobody's paying attention, especially after November the 8th, depending on how it turns out, why not force their hands? Why not have a little constitutional crisis?
No, I like that. I'm telling you, because then guess what? It'll go right to their laps. They're the ones who are going to have to decide.
Well, no, what would happen then is, I mean, there would be a full-on constitutional crisis, because on the one hand, and this gets a little complicated, so work with me here.
Mm-hmm.
Over on the Supreme Court side of things, the Supreme Court established very early on that they were not in the advice business. You know, advice and consent appears in that clause from Article 2, Section 2, Paragraph 2, that we just went over a few minutes ago. The Senate by their...
No, they interpret. They're interpreters.
Right. But so they're not going to... The Supreme Court does not make sua sponte declarations. Sua sponte in Latin meaning, on and by themselves, on its own initiative. The Supreme Court doesn't say, hey, wait a minute. No. You're thinking about passing... Congress, you're thinking about passing that law. Don't do it. It's unconstitutional. The essential rules of how the Supreme Court operate are that the Supreme Court must have a case and controversy, and the case and controversy must be fully ripe, fully mature. In other words, it has to have been all the way through the system, and it has to be justiciable. In other words, it has to be subject to being interpreted within the realm of stuff the Supreme Court does.
Right.
Okay, so we got all that?
Right.
So Merrick Garland walks his happy ass into the Supreme Court, and dead-eyed John Roberts suddenly has a problem.
Yep.
Because dead-eyed John Roberts technically cannot refuse to seat him. Because there's no case and no controversy before the court.
And I don't think there's any precedent.
On the other hand, if the House and Senate don't like it, the House would then have to move to impeach him, because that's the only way to get rid of a sitting Supreme Court justice short of death. Now, if you like a little chaos in your world, a little excitement, you might like that scenario, Todd.
I think we need a jump start, because stagnation, you know what happens when things are stagnant? You get mosquitoes, and then you get West Nile and Zika, and, you know, come on. We don't need Zika and a political Zika. All right,
Legionnaire's disease.
You know, yeah, because these things get bounced back to the lower courts, which means we're back to our regionalism again. Because the Fifth Circuit Court is ridiculously conservative. So this goes back to regionalism.
Yeah, I'm not even sure the 13th Amendment applies in the Fifth United States Circuit Court of Appeals.
I don't think so. As long as you got your gun. But, you know, this, and see, the things are, you know, we've had enough of this nonsense. Because the other thing, you know, this is slightly related, but you see, we need to start. What has been done? What have we gotten done as a country in the past 8 years, really, besides war?
You got the Affordable Care Act, and regardless, some people do.
Yeah, I have nothing. Yeah, we got started. We got started on health care. Okay, that's a plus. We got started on health care. Right. What else?
Not a lot. I mean, there's stuff the president would like to do, and there's stuff that the House and Senate would like to do. The House and Senate, especially in the House, because they've had, like, what, 50-some-odd votes to defund Obamacare? They'd really like to do that. Well, they've had them some votes to gut the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act. They'd like to do that, and that's what I was saying about the system of government being designed to maintain a certain static stability, even in the face of dysfunction. Do you think for one minute, Todd, that everybody at that Constitutional Convention and everybody involved in government in the original 13 states got along?
No, and I understand that, and that's exactly why.
So they designed a government to try to keep the assholes from running things.
But see, this leads into the other factor here, which I'm very concerned about. Now, what is this study group these people are in? Because I'm still concerned they're plotting this Constitutional Convention, and this is giving them a whole lot of time.
Oh, it's still out there, and remember, if Hillary Clinton, the devil, is elected president, there will be a... Now, damn it.
What happened?
For some reason, I turned off the reverb, and it didn't turn off. Oh, well. We'll have to work on that later. But anyway, if she becomes president, Hillary Clinton will ignite a brand new flurry and fury of right-wing hysteria. And so down in the several states, especially it being January and all, and states' legislatures coming into activity, there'll be a new flurry of activity for that Article 5 convention. And we are already perilously close to having the votes for it.
That's what I'm concerned about. And see, we've got nothing done. And this is really bothering me. I'm talking about finances now. And I think that's why I kept saying house, because, you know, they appropriate funds. For the past, let's say 3 years, borrowing money's been very cheap. You know, we're basically below, I don't know, we might be at 1% now. Maybe they went up a little bit. I mean, not that it really matters because we print our money, but it matters, it doesn't matter. But, you know, we need to be building our electrical grid back up, our roads, our bridges, our highways. And these folks cannot get themselves together. And they're going to wait until the money is just going to be too expensive. I mean, either way, you have to have it done. You know, there's good debt and bad debt. Right? So that's good debt. You can't affect efficient commerce without a decent infrastructure. And I don't know. These guys are playing games too damn long. I don't know what their problem is. I mean, I don't know. What is their problem?
Oh, it's not what their problem is, Todd. It's what their plan is. And I started saying this a few years ago, and I've never had reason to withdraw the assertion. They're playing a long game. And the long game they're playing is in the way of an insurgency. These teabaggers, these birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, healthers, birchers, and booger eaters, are opposed to the idea of the federal government in and of itself. Unless it's the federal government that exists only in their own, in what passes for their own minds. That's why they talk about small federal government. Well, by small federal government, they mean government that lets us do whatever we want to. Anything that stops them in their anti-government, anti-American crusade is by definition big government.
Well, then we're just stuck in ideological differences, and
no, we're not. We're not. I mean, things can change, and as you know, my theory is that the only time we get significant change in the United States is in times of crisis, and a window opens for about 2, 3, 4 years, and then closes again.
Well, you know what? On our side, I think this is what we need to do on our side. This is just a suggestion. I think we need to take the remnants of the Occupy folks, take the same cognizant, coherent thinking people from the Greens, some Black Lives Matter folks, you know, weave that together into a coalition. Coalitions are powerful. And take over the Democratic Party and do this right. Because the Republican Party now has been fractured. You got what used to be called the know-nothings, and then the real conservatives, and then the people who just...
They're as fractured as you think they are, Todd. I think when the rubber meets the road, or some other trite cliche, they will band together and do what Republicans always do and act in unity.
Well, okay, and you give me some things to think about, and I appreciate your feedback.
Oh, you're more than welcome. So I got to know though. Have you laid in your water? Have you got batteries and flashlights and all that kind of shit?
I do, and my neighbors do. Yeah.
Got any old folks need checked in on?
I'm on top of that. And see, remember, this was a year ago this month that we had the flood, you know, and people are still recovering from that.
Did more than 100 people die in that?
It was a lot. It was more than people thought were going to die, and it was just a lot, you know, it was a big deal. I mean, they couldn't even figure out, our legislature was a lot like yours, they couldn't figure out how are we going to pay for the roads, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, hopefully, we'll get through this. But you see, this season's just getting started, maybe. Because the weather is changing, you know, the weather's just strange. It's hot one day, it's cool the next, but it's already windy here, so it's on its way. It's windy out, It's a, the leaves are turning upside down on the trees. And it, my dog is acting a little crazy. I don't know where she is now.
What are the birds doing?
The birds?
Yeah.
Haven't seen any.
The birds have already taken flight. They bugged out.
That's interesting. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, I haven't seen any birds. I haven't even heard them. So, I'll let you know.
I'm just looking at the track here, and or what's projected as the track. And I guess it's gonna. It's going to scoot up the east coast of Florida. It'll largely bypass. The brunt of it will bypass South Florida, but it's just going to follow the curve. And it looks like the eye. If I'm understanding the map correctly, the eye might even come ashore somewhere right about the North Carolina South Carolina line. And then I guess they're projecting it scoots out, and along about 9 a.m. Sunday, the eye will be looks like maybe a couple of hundred miles offshore of New Jersey. And God, if that thing goes straight, it'll slam smack dab into Connecticut and Rhode Island and Massachusetts. Or maybe it's going to just squirrel on out and knock the snot out of Nova Scotia, if it doesn't peter out by then. But the thing's a bastard right now.
I looked at the radar a couple hours ago, and it's pretty large. That's a large system. It's totally encompassing the Caribbean.
It crosses the Bahama late tonight into tomorrow, and if it doesn't go out to sea, the party's going to be on by Friday where you are.
Well, I have to watch out for these for real children. I'm sorry, I was supposed to be a joke. What was that woman thinking about? I don't know where that came.
Nothing. I got nothing.
I mean, did she just go I don't know.
Tree eating children.
I mean, in the back of your mind, you're like, okay, Haiti, and they're living in mud, and they're still in tents, and it's poor, and it's the poorest place in the Western Hemisphere.
And it's poor, and it's poor because of us. It's the same thing Porfirio Diaz said about Mexico. You know, he said, poor Mexico, so far from God, so near to the United States. So you got that going on. But it is such an insult that this woman mentioned the tree eating children of Haiti, when that is the furthest reason. I mean, it's a non-reason. There are no tree eating children.
Right.
The reason Haiti is deforested in large part has its roots in capitalism. I had a note from Steve in China a little bit ago. He said, Haiti, the only successful slave revolt in history, if I recall. True.
That's what I was going to say.
And the white man is never going to let him forget about it either.
No, it's like there's a reason that they threw off the yoke, because I read up on that, I don't know, for some reason, a couple weeks ago, Napoleon, like, they beat off a couple of folks, the Spaniards, and then Napoleon came and he wanted to, you know, get things straight because he thought he could. It was late, he can't put me down that date, but he was the last European.
Well, the entire reason that we wound up with the Louisiana Purchase, the reason that offer was made to Thomas Jefferson by Napoleon, was because Haiti was sucking up all of Napoleon's money, and he rather badly needed it.
That's what happened. Right. He couldn't fight them anymore. It was like, I'm done.
And everybody and he sent all of those nice French troops to the Caribbean, And they died like flies from malaria and yellow fever. Because remember, even in what is now the United States, if you were south of Pennsylvania and you got here, you had to survive what was called the seasoning. If you're white folks.
Mm. Right.
The seasoning. Which meant that if you survived the first year, you'd probably live, but there was a good chance you wouldn't survive the first year. Part of the reason that African slavery takes place in the New World is because they had a genetic predisposition to be resistant to malaria and yellow fever.
Oh, yeah. And they were very selective. They wanted the rice people. You know, they wanted, because people had crafts and trades and whatnot on the continent of Africa. They wanted the folks who could do certain things like cultivate rice or...
I mean, the slavers had no idea of, you know, medicine or bugs or germs or anything. They just knew that that stolen, kidnapped Africans didn't die from malaria nearly as often as white people did. And of course, now we know that, unless I'm mistaken, and somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, the same gene that produces the malaria resistance also produces the sickle cell.
Exactly. That's the way I understand it also. Yep. That's exactly what I understand. It has that crescent. It's something, well, I don't know if it has to do with the shape of the cell, but yes. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I understand. Let me ask you something tongue-in-cheek funny. How can we trust the French? I don't know why this popped into my head the other day. Every term that I can think of, not every, but just about, that has to do with spying, it's French. Espionage. Dossier.
Sabotage. Well, that's because the French invented modern diplomacy. One of the early complaints of the English and the Americans was that the French could not be trusted because they used because diplomacy was conducted in French, and they used it in a far more nuanced fashion than the English or or anybody else were able. So, you know, you sign a treaty with the French, and the next thing you know, they're fucking you. Oh, it says right here. Yeah, we get to fuck you.
This is not what it'd be to. Right?
Yeah.
Right? So you answered my question. Okay. Oh, my God. That's hilarious. I don't know. Well.
By the way, you got a note from Jim up here. He says, all my best to Todd. I was there during Hugo. So Jim knows of which we speak.
Well. I'll let you know when the dust settles. And I hope you guys have a good evening. And
I don't think dust is... Todd, I don't think dust is going to be your problem, brother.
No.
Let me know when the water recedes.
The ground is still... I'm telling you, people, I still have mildew on my house. It really never dried... It never dried out. It never dried out from last year. It really never really dried out. And I'm, you know, these trees have been falling. They've been killing people. I mean, I lost a car. These trees, the soil here is funny. I was in the sandhills and, it's loose soil.
Doesn't suck up just a whole lot of water.
No, it goes down, but the water table's high.
By the way, you have a reminder coming in from Brother Deacon Asa that another problem with the fucking French is that they don't have a word for entrepreneur. Remember when our president said that? Who was it? French president or Spanish president Jose Maria Aznar? Was that who it was?
I don't remember. But that was funny. I don't remember. I just know that thank God Gary Johnson wasn't in charge. You know, I mean, what the fuck, man? You pick a name. Benazir Bhutto, Indira Gandhi. You know.
Well, I mean, she's kind of dead, Indira Gandhi. But you know, what the hell's wrong with saying it? Nah, see, he could never say Justin Trudeau.
Yeah, I was thinking Trudeau, too, but I wasn't thinking about his son. I don't know. I don't know about his son. I'm not quite sure about him. But wait, is that the senior? Is Justin the senior or the junior?
No, daddy was Pierre.
Oh, that's true. That's right. Pierre Trudeau. Yeah, Justin is the guy. Okay. Well,
I mean, we've got still have a few friends around the world. I mean, and you know, the listeners in Japan will push back, but what if he'd said Shinzo Abe, Prime Minister of Japan?
Abe seemed like, you know, I liked Abe. Now, I do remember Abe, you know, because he was very cerebral and he was very pragmatic, and he wouldn't just talk off the top of his head. You know, he thought about how he was going to respond to something. He was very thoughtful. Yes, that's what I remember about Abe. I do. He was class. He was a class act. Yes. The reason I was thinking about the Constitution and our Senate and our broken government, because I'm trying to think beyond the presidency, because it appears that, you know, whoever wins, we're going to have to do some work, because we're going to have to keep Hillary from her corporate inclinations, you know. And if the fascist person wins, then you know what we have to do. But, you know, so either way, I think we're going to have to work. I don't know, man. I don't believe her when she says she's going to be against the TPP. I don't know. I'm not feeling that. What do you think?
You mean when she said she doesn't agree with it as it is presently constituted, or as is presently drafted? That means it.
But now she's like, no, I'm totally against it. That's the recent thing. I'm totally against it. But I don't know. I feel like she might win. I feel like it's going to be too close. I don't know. I just don't know. Well, who knows? But I'm just not feeling very, very good about this at all. The fact that this person is, the other person is so close, is bothersome. Because that makes me look at our body politic as we need to do some work.
Well, yeah, and look, I've said all along, Todd, if Hillary wins, that doesn't mean everybody gets to go take a nap.
Hell no! No. We have to ride her like a pig. I don't know.
Ride her like a barred mule.
That's it. That's it. That's the farm analogy I was shooting for. Yeah. Because, I mean, after that first debate or second debate, when she just all of a sudden adopted all of Bernie's platform, and I was like, wait a minute. 15 minutes ago.
I remember when I was a little girl growing up in Brooklyn. Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, that was good, Bob. Well, let me go batting down these hatches, because this storm is coming, and my dog is going to freak out. The weather changes, the barometric pressure, it bothers her.
Well, if you have to go, do you have somewhere you can go and a way to go there?
Yeah, we can go over to Atlanta. And go up to, we have some friends in North Carolina. Oh, speaking of North Carolina, you know, I was up there last month or, you know, a few weeks ago. Do you know that the Fat Tire, they have a brewery now in Asheville?
Oh, yeah, they expanded. A couple of breweries expanded into North Carolina. Sierra Nevada's in North Carolina, too.
I didn't know that. Oh, that's good news.
They brew a shockingly good Oktoberfest beer at their North Carolina brewery, in conjunction with a German brewery. And no, it's really quite good.
And, well, have you had the Abbey by the people who make Gaelic? Highland. They have an Abbey, a double Abbey.
No, they don't. We don't get Highland up here yet.
Oh my God. That's terrible.
Is that the outfit that's over in Western North Carolina?
It's the one that's in Asheville. How they have?
Yeah, is that the? I can't remember. There's a brewery over that way, that makes a coffee porter.
That might be it.
And I had it once years ago on tap at a little bar in Knoxville.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a coffee porter, but it was like drinking a dark beer that had had some Ghirardelli chocolate just finely grated into it. You know, the dark bitter
stuff.
It's
really complex, right? It's smooth as velvet, and then as it's going down, you taste the other.
Yeah, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, it had a whopping serious alcohol content too. I mean, you know, maybe
it's a big beer. It's like 8% maybe. You know, something like that. I like the big beers when I can get them.
Man, Todd, barbecue porn, beer porn, is it? You are a man after my own heart.
I didn't know if you liked the big beers, man. Oh my, that's my thing.
I'm a lot over IPAs.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything's still an IPA frenzy, and I'm convinced that IPAs are IPAs are the way hipster brewers cover up their mistakes. Jesus, this shit sucks. Yeah,
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it's throw a front end loader of hops into it. We'll call it a handlebar mustachioed reverse upside down Nova Scotian IPA.
Like your first cigarette. No, it's good. No, I'm fine.
That's right. Great.
Let me tell you, when I was in San Diego, they have an Arrogant Bastard. That shit'll fuck you up. It's pretty good.
And then there's the, what was it? Harpoon Leviathan?
Harpoon is good.
Real malty, but 13% alcohol.
Right.
Yeah, Agnes sat down and drank one of those over at Secret one night.
And, you had your wife drinking, you didn't.
No, I didn't make her. She said, oh, that sounds good. Bring me a, because they'll bring you a little taste. And she tasted it and said, ooh, that's yummy. I'll have one. And they don't even serve that in pints. That comes in 12-ouncers. They serve it in 12-ounce pours. And, I mean, Agnes downed that thing upright and started having her own private Oktoberfest.
Well, you know what? I could tell
she
you.
She loved
that,
it.
I was in New Bern. I don't know if you ever heard of New Bern. I mean, not that it really matters because this is a California beer, but Laguntas makes a. This is one of the best IPAs because I understand what you're saying about the IPA. The cringe factor. I mean, you get to a certain point, you don't have to suffer through a beer. I can buy some root beer, but they have. It's not. They make a couple of IPAs, but this one in particular, it might be called Heavy Metal. Forge.
Okay. Because we get Lagunitas up here every now and then.
Well, this Iron Forge is smooth. It is not a bitter, it's not a cringeworthy IPA.
I don't want to drink a beer that reminds me of taking my first bite of a green persimmon.
Well, I'm partial to the Belgian. I like my box a lot.
My beer heart is German. It really is. Kolsch above all things. Alt, the Dusseldorfer Alt is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that goes good with barbecue. A Kolsch, because it's nice and clean and light.
Damn right.
You know. God. Yeah, I don't know. What am I going to do?
I heard a rumor over at the little brewery that it's not too far from here. You can still go over there and get your growler filled with their Kolsch, which they call Crux. And if that's the case, well, my goodness gracious.
Well, I hope you can do it.
I'm going to try, but seriously, in all seriousness, Todd, you know, you're a member of this community and a friend and your family, and just as this stuff goes down, check in and let us know everything's okay.
I will, Bob, and I appreciate that because I appreciate that, and I hope you have a great day tomorrow and all good things.
Thanks, appreciate it. You
take care, my friend.
Bye now.
All right.
Calling from South Carolina, Stan. That's our buddy Todd. Down in Australia, Jen with a quick note says, "Yeah, German beers are wonderful." When it's actually made in Germany. So many German beers here in Oz are made here now, and really the oomph is gone. I know the feeling. My heart broke the first time I picked up a can of Fastas, and I realized it was made, you know, somewhere in Ontario, because, you know, they admit it. But at least it's good Union beer. But yeah, like Cooper's is still made in Australia, and you can get that over at Pies and Pints, and I sneak over for one of those once in a while. Marty says, my beer heart is divided between Ireland and Scotland. Oh, Scotch ale. Yeah. Right. Jen noting, I'm sure we have as much glyphosate in our water, too. The Germans were shocked and horrified to find out that when they tested some of their beers, there were traces of glyphosate in that. And, but not nearly to the, you know, there's plenty to worry about. Let's keep it rolling. Before I go back to the phones, it is 17 minutes past the third hour of the program. And, we've still got $165 to raise. Not a good sign with only 42 minutes left in the program. If anybody's sitting out there on the fence thinking, I'm hoping you'll vote lean toward, let's help out tonight. Because, these get to be some rather boogerish holes. Let's go back and check in with Punky and his translator, Scott. What's happening, Scott?
Well, meanwhile, in a nearby sector of the galaxy, here I are. Punky is enjoying the fruits of the labor of the nice people from whom I order cockatiel food. It arrived today. He did a little Snoopy dance. He was so happy to see the guy.
Oh, you mean the little back and forth across the perch, kind of.
Oh yeah,
with some up and down with the head and.
Because he's in all the years I've had him. There's this one type of food that's made by Hart's, which I think used to be called Hart's Mountain. It's the Bonanza blend of cockatiel food. All other cockatiel foods do not compare. If I attempt to sneak them into his little food dishes, he will knock seeds hither and yon out of his little food dishes all over the damn place.
Hey, he knows when you're giving him Sam's Choice Wally World cockatiel food. That ain't no dumb bird.
Well, I don't know what it is about this stuff, but he loves it. He has thrived on it for lo these many years. And when he saw that the guy was here with the box, he knew what was up. Because I mentioned to him the other day that I placed the order, that it's on its way. And he was just... And I found something out the other day that I didn't know before. He likes walnuts.
How does he manage that? I mean, in the shell, or do you shell them for him?
Oh, no. He's got one of these Christmas time toy soldier walnut crackers that I've fused onto soldered onto his top of his metal cage. And he turns the crank. He gets the cat to help push the walnut in the shell up the little ramp into the toy soldier nutcracker's mouth, and then he works the lever or whatever the hell it is, and I hear this all day long. Cracking those goddamn walnuts. But
you're serious, aren't you?
No, I'm just kidding.
I was hoping you were serious, because you would have had a viral video there on your hands, Scott.
I didn't call to talk about my nuts. Actually,
you're going to hell for that. You know that, right?
Yeah, I know. You were talking earlier about, is it Merrick Garland?
Yes.
who's been waiting in advise and consent limbo since, what, February of this year?
Yeah, I think he's just been sitting and knitting, and he's got an Afghan the size of Kansas now.
Yeah, the size of Afghanistan. What do you say?
Well,
but anyway, he's you looked at the possibility of him strolling in the post-election period, just strolling into the Supreme Court.
Just going out for a walk one day,
putting on his robe, figuring out which seat he gets, and sitting right down and writing himself a decision. And then the notion of the impeachment process for a justice of the Supreme Court. I'm wondering what the protocol is for that, because in the impeachment of a president, the House does the impeachment part, the Senate does the trial part, and the person presiding in the Senate portion is the Chief Justice
of the United States.
Right, but if there's a Supreme Court justice being impeached, an associate justice, how could the Supreme Court justice, the Chief Justice, sit in a place of decision-making? Wouldn't that be a conflict of some sort?
Well, there's not just a hell of a lot of precedent out there, but Samuel Chase... Not Salmon P. Chase, but Samuel Chase was, he signed the Declaration of Independence and everything.
Mm-hmm.
He got impeached, but he was acquitted by the Senate.
He was a justice?
He was an associate justice of the Supreme Court.
Okay.
So, according to Wikipedia... 8 articles of impeachment late in October 1804. He was a Federalist. And never forget that Thomas Jefferson was a vengeful man. And so consequently, but Thomas Jefferson would also try to keep his little hands clean. But he was a Federalist, and they began the trial of... the Senate was controlled by the Jeffersonian faction... And they began the trial in early 1805. Aaron Burr was president of the Senate. He presided. The prosecution was led by Thomas Jefferson's cousin, John Randolph. They hated each other. But I'm looking here to see... I guess Aaron Burr presided, because it only says that the Chief Justice only presides in the case of a presidential impeachment, I think, or maybe a vice presidential impeachment.
Okay, no, was Burr vice president?
He was Jefferson's vice president.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought.
And for all, this is just a side note, but for all the opprobrium that Burr is subjected to in history, his performance during that impeachment was said to be impeccable. And it was kind of a witch hunt anyway, because he was impeached on the grounds that he was being too political. Imagine this in the modern age, Scott. He was impeached because they said he was being too Federalist in his decisions.
Well, you know, in fair, as bad as he could have ever been, in fairness to Merrick Garland, who's been cooling his heels now since February, at least Samuel Chase got to get onto the court.
But in answer to your original question, the House would impeach, and then the Senate would try, and the President of the Senate, who is the Vice President of the United States, would preside over the trial.
Now, do you think...
Which, in this case, would be, up until January 20th, Joe Biden.
Yeah, well, that was going to be my next question. Would the people in charge of such things wait until after the new president comes in? But even then, given the current polling, which I seem to think favors Hillary, that would mean that Tim Kaine would be the executive in charge of the Senate trial judgment portion of the impeachment process. It's just so much happy horse shit.
Well, it's fun to think about too. But
here's the thing: if you take two steps back and look at the larger picture, it's indicative of the piss poor House and Senate that we've got going for us. These are the most obstructionist, obstinate, dug-in bastards that you would ever want to find. Not that you'd really want to find people like this, but the thing about it is, we somehow put up with it. We somehow elect these bastards, and if similar circumstances in any other situation were to present themselves to you, let's say it's a meal that you order at a restaurant, and it's just horrible. Undercooked, overcooked, wrong stuff on the plate, you know, et cetera, at all. You would call the waiter over. You'd say, this food, so-called, is unacceptable, and you would raise 31 flavors of hell over it. If it were a relationship that wasn't working too well, you would fight, you would bicker, you would argue, but then you would either consult a divorce lawyer or you'd consult somebody who could take you both in for counseling to hopefully resolve the situation. If this were errant children of junior high or young teenage years raising hell, you would send them to somebody to cause them to behave more appropriately. In all of the cases, you would be perfectly justified to take action and raise your voice over what's been going on. But somehow, in the case of the House and the Senate, as they're currently comprised, we just shrug our shoulders and look at it like, well, just another day here in downtown Oz.
I don't know that I completely agree with you, Scott. But we are limited as a polis in how we can go about sending the meal back, to work within your metaphor. That chance only happens every 6 years in the Senate.
Well, and that is true. That is true. But the people are so blinded to the reality of the situation, they're like hogs at a trough, gobbling up every bit of the right-wing propaganda and nonsense. They continually elect these bastards, and maybe that's the root cause of the problem. To the extent that we stop electing them and get people in there, I mean, I'm not that old in the grand scheme of things, but I'm certainly old enough to remember when there were states people in the House and the Senate and the presidency and every other level of government. There were people who were committed to actually, once they were given the opportunity, they would actually do stuff that was worthy of getting done. And Lord knows there's a laundry list longer than both of my arms put together of stuff needing to get done. You know, Todd, I think, was mentioning it earlier, that just infrastructure would be a good starting point. There is so much that's been left undone, or they've tried to undo stuff that were stuff that was years in the making, like, oh, I don't know, the damn voting rights provisions. They either try to undo stuff, or they leave stuff that needs getting done undone, and it's unacceptable. Maybe there is no remedy.
But Scott, the government we have is the government we deserve. And I only say that not to be trite, but to sort of try to pull us out of our bubble. There's a whole bunch of America, Scott, that thinks that America could be great again if we could just get rid of all of these secular progressives in the Senate.
Oh, I know.
Because see, they're convinced that this is the same group that's convinced Hillary Clinton is a liberal.
Yeah, she's
a socialist.
She's not a liberal. She's not a socialist. She's a devil.
Well, she's the same. I mean, she's center right at best.
Yeah.
Although she has lately mumbled nominally progressive ideas. But, you know, that's what you get in an imperial administrator.
But
what's more dangerous, if I may point this out, is that the Benito Cheeto is out there riffing at points on stuff Bernie said. I mean, if you watch the pageant, you heard him talk about, quote, our crumbling infrastructure and how shitty our airports are. Now, that's not what most of us think about when we think about crumbling infrastructure. But mentioning our crumbling infrastructure, I mean, that perks up the little ears of progressive people. Yeah, well, it's a pity you're goddamn crazy. But there's always going to be an element of people within any subgroup going, yeah, I don't think I'll vote for it.
Well, and here's the deal. That's the very dynamic that I'm referring to in terms of the people being fed up. Unfortunately, and I told this to an early Trump supporter a year ago, if you think Donald J. Trump is the answer, then you don't have a full appreciation of what the goddamn question was, you know? And he is the guy with the big bucket of slop at the trough replenishing the supply for the hogs to go, hog wild over, you know? And like I say, you know, anybody that thinks he's in any way the answer or an acceptable answer needs to spend some time on the couch, you know, maybe 3 to 5 sessions a week. Until they get until they're sent in for regrouping or something. I mean, it's and that aspect of it, and I can appreciate, you know, what you've been saying off and on over these months. That is the frightening aspect of it. That is the unknown factor that we won't know until it's over, and even then we're not going to know how it all turns out. That there is a chance that this ass clown, this demented circus peanut, could actually be elected. And God help us.
Oh, until the election is over, that possibility always exists.
Oh, I know. And it doesn't really take that much. Like, I think Mark Twain said, always do right. It will gratify some and astonish the rest. And that is so true. It doesn't take a lot of effort and energy to do the right thing. But in some precincts of life, people have forgotten about the necessity, the requirement even, to behave in a manner that's consistent with being positive as opposed to being a fucking asshole, you know? Sorry, I didn't mean to get so worked up over it. But
no, not being a bitch is what we have instead of God. That comes, you know, that's out of Hemingway, but it's really quite true.
And let's take it to the worst case scenario. Let's say Trump is elected, and let's say January 20th, 2017 rolls around. That's going to present some problems, the swearing in part, because you know as well as you're sitting there in West by God by Cold Virginia that he's going to want to change the last line in the oath, so help me, you know?
Yeah, that's like what I said the other night. When he approaches the throne of the Almighty, he expects to see a mirror sitting there.
Oh, of course. Unfortunately, it'll be a fucking circus carnival funhouse mirror, you know? So, I don't know. Maybe I have more questions than answers, but I love my country, despite what people might say, you know, being a progressive or a liberal or a rabble-rouser. I love my country dearly. As I've gotten older and have had the experience of time and space and have been able to see it being devolving into what it is today in so many ways, it gives me a greater appreciation of just how great we might have once been and how we could be again But first, we've got to choose that. It all comes down to choosing. And for a multitude of reasons, those choices are not being, not only not being taken, but they're not being weighed. They're not even being discussed in an intelligent manner, because decent dialogue in this country doesn't hardly exist anymore, except maybe on this show. So,
well, I mean, we do what we can, and to a certain extent, there's an element of what we do here that's sort of therapeutic. I know it is for me, because if I had to walk around just sort of contemplating November 8th, I'd be a mess. And so we get in here inside our little bubble, and we talk to each other, and we agree on things. Sometimes we disagree on things. But
no,
we are by and large the better for it. But we do have to remember, it's kind of like that business with only 13% of people giving a damn about the Supreme Court nominating powers of the presidency. We are not representative samples. And I guess
that's true.
To the same extent, the hardcore right wingers, you know, most of America exists somewhere in the probably somewhere the center right. Now, if you ask them carefully crafted poll questions, you'll find out that they're center left. But if you told them they were center-left, they'd call you a godless commie and call the law.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, another moment from my world, but I went to drop off Margie at Hellmart today, and there so the parking lot has these long parking spaces for vans, and they're marked van. Okay, people who have to handicapped people, disabled people who have to travel in a van and, you know, be lowered out of the van on the lift with their wheelchair and stuff like that. So naturally, in the van parking space is a Chevy Blazer, driven by somebody with a disability parking placard, who figured, you know, screw those people in the vans. And there were handicapped spaces open for, you know, angle in parking, wouldn't have been a problem. So I noticed that, and I'm, that's not a van. So yes, that immediately colored my impression of whoever was driving the car, to wit, oh, must be an asshole. And then it was confirmed, because they had not one, but two, in either lower corner of their rear windshield, stickers that said, "Trump digs coal." Jeez. And then I guess the name that was beneath it is an advertisement for some coal or coal services company. It just said, "Genmar." And just looking it up, Genmar, leading the way in ground control technology, coal and hard rock mining, civil and tunneling. So you just kind of knew. So sure, they'll support Trump, but they're also going to get an ad in for their business. A global family-owned company that's leading the way in ground control technology for the mining and tunneling industries. Since 1972, our mission has been focused on developing and manufacturing quality ground control products. Today, so is this like ground control to Major Tom? no, this would be ground control to Trumpanzee. Today, we make a broad range of reliable products, from bolts and beams to channels and trusses. So these are people who manufacture shit for underground mining.
Yeah.
But they also, you know, it's one thing to put out bumper stickers for Trump, but we're going to, by God, make sure that you know, we're going to get a word in for Genmar, too.
And you know, No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, you know, they're politicized, but, that, you know, they're probably somewhere in the middle. Or think they are. They're probably ideologically to the right of Mussolini, but they consider themselves just like everybody else in West Virginia. Because we love coal.
And another aspect of the dynamic that goes on between their ears is the part about not everyone, but a lot of people universally in that group of a lot of people hate Congress as an institution, but they love reelecting their own congressman.
Yeah, everybody else's congressman is the problem. That's precisely my point.
Right. And as far as the mindset and the dynamic of the people who engage in conversation radio on this program and a few others besides, not to bring theology into it, but in a big way, we're a lot like the voice of the prophet crying in the wilderness, repent, which, you know, doesn't really have a religious notion attached to it other than repent, I'm told, means to turn around. Stop going the way you're going, turn around 180 degrees, and start going in the appropriate direction. Okay?
Yeah. And part and parcel of all of this comes via a note from Jen in Australia who says, recent reporting of comments by Drumpfers reveals they're even more stupid than we thought. And that's the frustrating, sweaty fear in the middle of the night inducing problem. They're dumb in a way that just can't be reasoned with. It's disheartening because how do we fight back against what cannot be reasoned with? They're, you know, the old Italian mafia would give you an offer you couldn't refuse. The Trumpers will make you an offer you can't understand. And I mean, I sort of briefly lived that in a very weird way, you know, last night. I mean, they really do walk among us. And so you just think all that MENA airport stuff's just bullshit, do you? Well, only because it is. Well, what, haven't you ever seen the Clinton Chronicles? You talking about that video that Jerry Falwell was hustling until it was proven to be so demonstrably false that he had to quit selling it because it was so false he was about to get his ass sued? It's all true, man! And at which point I said, yeah, I know, because Alex Jones said so. Alex Jones is a tool of the Illuminati, man!
Well, there's... It is a vexing sort of situation, as you're mentioning here and what Jen in Australia mentioned. The fact that the people are just so locked into their belief system, their understanding, so-called, of the situation, that nothing of substance or, you know, reality-based reality can penetrate that barrier, that force field, or whatever the hell it is.
And I don't know what you do. That's one of the problems that arises out of all of this. Unless by some miracle, America comes to its senses and, like, you know, defeats Trump 80-20 in some sort of monumental landslide, which ain't gonna happen. Come January 20th, 2017, we are still going to be a bitterly divided nation. And Lincoln wasn't just talking about the Civil War when he said a house divided or against itself cannot stand.
Well, and the forces who are dead set opposed to positive change and stuff going on, that's... They count on that. They count on the mindset of these masses who are hypnotized. They're mesmerized. They're something.
I don't necessarily think they are. They're low information. Okay, I don't think you can make collective statements about all the potential Trump voters. I think, as Hillary noted, and I think she was correct, probably about half of them are Klansmen and racists who've come out into the open in the last 8 years because they have been encouraged to by our by the right wing's the campaign of fear and hatred. They're stormfronters. They are white nationalists, white supremacists, Christian fascists. But then the other half of the Trumpers, there's a segment of them who are just anybody but Hillary types. And then there's another segment who are just going to vote Republican because that's... And, you know, look at that map at 538 we keep talking about. If this election was decided upon number of states won instead of electoral college votes, it wouldn't even be worth waiting until November 8th. She'd be swamped.
Well, and when you talk about the variations, the different versions of the voter who is stuck, okay? I always think of my favorite example, my brother, who I've talked about a number of times. He doesn't even like Trump, yet the last time I spoke to him, he planned on voting for Trump. I mean, he was a Ted Cruz supporter all the way, until all the way turned out to be as far as Ted Cruz got in the process. And then you look at the manner in which Trump knocked off systematically, 16 or 17 other candidates, Republican candidates?
Yeah, a lot.
Okay. And some of those people, I mean, as bad as they could have ever been, some of them were, in some ways, a hell of a lot better than Trump. At least they knew the workings of government. At least they knew that, you know, you have to have some semblance of reality in your rhetoric in order to be a success. But yet, all of them fell by the wayside. It's like, you know, and that lands firmly in the laps of the primary voters who voted for Republican candidates or didn't vote for certain Republican candidates. That's squarely in their lap, you know, if you want to cast responsibility.
And Jen in Australia reminds us, she said, Scott, did you see that crazed woman who was interviewed after the first debate who said basically, yeah, he's a train wreck, but he's our train wreck. I have to vote for the conservative, which I find hilarious because Hillary Clinton's pretty goddamn conservative. I mean, there's video of her touting her conservative bona fides. Hey, Scott, I got to get out of here, though, because I'm going to have to go pick Margie up the minute that this is over with. But okay, it's been a good conversation, and I'm so happy that Punky's thrilled with his new, I don't know, do birds eat, I mean, is it birdie kibble?
Oh, it's all kinds of stuff. It's sunflower seeds, it's millet, it's, I don't have the bag handy or the container, but, you know, there's a long list of different things that birds
well,
don't
no, as long as there's no morning glory seeds in there, I think you're in the okay.
No, I don't think so. And if there were, I would just plant those for my own personal use. But anyway, fry them up. Okay. Well, anyway, Bob, take care, and we'll talk again.
We'll see you, Scott. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
My buddy Scott and Punky, who is apparently very happy. I think we should just go ahead and name Punky the official avian mascot of the Horn. Because I don't recall a whole lot of other birds out there. And Punky, you know, Punky talks on the program. Or chirps or whatever. And, now, that's no offense to the dogs, the cats, the ferrets, the goldfish. No, Punky's just the avian mascot. Then we can work out the other details later. Listen, 10 minutes before the hour, and I had wanted to put this out on the table several, 10, 20 minutes ago, but the conversation sort of takes precedence. We are $165 away from raising the necessary funds for the evening. That having been said, Brother Deacon Asa jumped out there several tens of minutes back, and said, listen, I will match the first $50, the next $50 that come in whatever in whatever denomination or whatever combination. So that's pretty huge. That would take us down to only $65 in terms of a deficit and go a long way toward meeting the evening's fundraising goals. So that offer's on the table, and hopefully it will be met. Subject line, on topic, Steve in China writes, "It seems to me the current conversation, mine and Scott's, is answering its own question. We veer towards and fall into the sort of ineffective and do-nothing state of government that we have otherwise become. But who has the means to make things change, and where is the source of power? A nation that has been continuously at war for over half a generation or more is a people less and less susceptible to the influences as the recommendations of good governance. We vote these idiots and crooks into office by default. We have determined that racist business tycoons are viable leaders of a once great nation. Our presidential candidates are suspect at best and run their business empires with the consent of tyrants and killers the world over. A new generation grows into early adulthood with a memory and expectation of perpetual conflict, planetary disintegration, lost hopes, dead dreams. We slaughter our school children as a variety of new sport. Am I making this up?" No, Steve, you're not. "We love it so very much, and here we are. Not we, of course, but the good people are always outnumbered by the bad." And one of those, you know, and I think Steve's right. A couple of generations raised on war are going to see that as a new normal. My generation came of age on the idea of moon landings and exploration of space, and we were too young, really, to get Vietnam, because, you know, I was 10 years old in 1973. But I plopped my happy little butt down in front of the TV to see the moon landing. And that was hopeful stuff. What hopeful stuff do we have to tell my 6-year-old grandson about? Really? About the only thing I can think of is that the indigenous peoples of this continent have awoken and refused to be. To quietly go away as they struggle for their very survival and the survival of the entire species. That's beautiful and hopeful. But it also arises as a response to negative stimulus. So I think there's a lot in what Steve says. And yeah, the good people are outnumbered by the bad. And we'll probably have a full litany of that come tomorrow. Thank you, Charlene. Charlene jumped in and met half of Brother Deacon Ace's challenge. Thank you very kindly. That means there's only $25 to go. So thank you, Charlie and Steve, Cletus and Ms. Karen, and Charlene this evening. We're close. Oh, and a couple of program notes, just a general reminder. I'll be filling in for Malloy on Thursday. Mike and Kathy have to be away from the studio. So this program will go from 6 to 8 and then from 9 to 11. And then I hate to say this, but no more Ann Monday next week. I have to go and deep throat a garden hose again. I can't tell, this time in Charleston, I can't tell you how much I don't look forward to that. But it's got to be done. So those two things are out there, you know, mark your calendars, I guess. But apart from that, well, everything should be normal, extra normal for prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow and for Friday on the front porch. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, as you always do, whether you listen live or whether you listen in delay via the podcast. A reminder, for those of you who want to, you know, we make the program available in many ways, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and, yes, Podbean, podbean.com. The program and Dr. Bill's program always go up on Podbean. If you want to look for Dr. Bill's, it's the Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility. And if you want to look for mine, just look for Head On with Bob Kincaid. But Podbean is another alternative. We're on Roku devices. Goodness me. We're all over the place. But for the podcast, yeah, Podbean, as well as the RSS feed at whiterosesociety.org. Thank you, Arnold. Arnold noting, great show. I appreciate it. Thank you very kindly. And a reminder, we're very much open to new subscribers. We constantly need them. One of these days, we'll get all 400, and I won't have to do the fundraising thing anymore. Won't that be nice? Yes. So, thanks go out to everybody who makes all of this happen. You who spend your precious finite time sharing with us in this little community of ours. Thanks to the participants in the chat room. Thanks to the callers, emailers, financial supporters. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Join us in Charleston, West Virginia, in the parking lot of the West Virginia DEP on October 17th, if you're anywhere near here. Join us as we reignite the struggle to save Coal River Mountain. You won't regret it. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.